Hello, welcome to the Higher Education Researcher. This is a podcast by the Center for Higher Education Research and Evaluation at Lancaster University. My name is Janja Komljenović and my guest today is Dr. Sina Vesta. Sina is a researcher at the Katholische Universität Eichstätt Ingolstadt in Germany. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Her work focuses on academic freedom, internationalization of higher education, and teacher education in particular. Welcome and thanks for coming, Sina.
Thank you, Janja, for the invitation. I'm very happy to talk to you today.
So today we will talk about Sina's research on academic freedom in different national contexts, which is a very exciting topic. Sina, could you tell us what is academic freedom and how can we think about it? Also, how has our understanding of it been changing in time? I guess it's not a static concept, but it must have different meanings in different time-space relations. So what is it? How do you understand it?
It's not that easy to define academic freedom, to be honest, because there are so many different understandings of it. Yes, the national context does play a role, so within different legislations, we have different understandings of what academic freedom means. When we look at higher education researchers and their understanding, I honestly have one definition that I do like. It's from Baerdal, and he says, academic freedom is the right of the individual scholar to follow truth without fear of punishment. So basically it says that we should be able to look in the research we do on the different aspect that we think is important for us. But other scholars like Hayes, they even say it's a right of all human beings and they connect it to the freedom of speech. So it's very diverse. Sometimes it's connected to only research. Sometimes we think about academic freedom with research and we do think about it in teaching. And it's always connected to the social role of the university. So it has something to do with the responsibility of what we do. Yeah. Basically, academic freedom is for the individual scholar to really think of their profession and to innovate the research based on the things they actually discover without having fear or being pushed by politics or economics.
Thank you. That's very interesting. How about location? I suppose we could understand academic freedom as a set of social relations. And if so, then contexts such as particular cultural, political, and even economic arrangements must surely have some sort of impact. Can you tell us more about that?
Of course, location and time are really important if we have a concept that's not based on a clear definition. So the context in which we do research has an impact on how we experience academic freedom. It starts with the discipline. If you think you're in medicine, for example, and now you're trying to have a vaccination against coronavirus, then of course there would be different restrictions to academic freedoms than someone who is actually dealing with social issues that might have more political implications where people could think differently about things. So yes, discipline plays a role. Usually people think in natural science there shouldn't be that much of a problem of academic freedom. And the place also plays a role. If we have different political systems, we can see if they are actually dealing differently with academic freedom. In some nations, it's actually a basic law, like in Germany or Italy, where it's actually a constitutional right and people can refer to this if they want to think about academic freedom. In other countries, like in Singapore, it's not a constitutional right. It's actually not part of the legislation, but still academics can exercise some degree of freedom in their work. When we think about money, that also has an influence on how we can exercise our academic freedom. If we don't have the resources to do our research, and that might also apply to the natural science, if we don't have resources to do research on things that others don't deem important, then we might not be able to exercise our academic freedom because there is not the infrastructure to do the research. So it has something to do with the political position. It has something to do with money as well, and also with the idea that we should give something back to society and actually exercise this academic freedom in a responsible way. So we should always think that our research also has an impact, a positive impact on the society. So it's a dialogue, what actually the context is in which we do research and what the mission for our research is as well.
Great, thank you. So if we think about the academic freedom as pursuit of truth, as you started with the definition, and it's quite logical then how it applies to the research process, but you also mentioned it applies to the teaching and learning set of processes. How do you understand that academic freedom plays out in the teaching context, and in particular then again in different, I guess, locations, and does it apply only at the university kind of level or also lower levels of education? I'm not really sure if you've done research around that, but do you have any thoughts around this?
Oh, actually, as I'm now involved in teacher education, I'm thinking a lot about academic freedom also in the teaching profession. And there is actually, a recommendation from the UNESCO, a pretty old one, that actually acknowledges that also teachers should have freedom in their classrooms to decide on the methodology they use for teaching, on the material they decide to, just because they are in a really fluid position. They have to deal with the problems in the classroom second by second. They can't just go back and refer to something. So they have this pedagogical task and they need freedom because they are the only ones who actually do know the students and who could react flexibly on the students' needs. So they do need a certain degree of freedom to actually also decide on the speed, on the they move on to other topics. So I would say it also applies to lower levels than universities, but in the legislation, it's usually connected to higher education teaching. And it's also about planning of modules of study degree programs. So they were actually based on the disciplinary aspects, not only on the political or economic needs. So it's not only about training students to get a job later on, it's about also using the term of Bildung that we use in Germany, so that people could really develop themselves and be critical and reflective about what they do. So it would be also the responsibility of a higher education teacher to decide what things are important for the student and also to have a more or less democratic approach towards the teaching. So they need to think about what the students need in their future lives. So that's where actually academic freedom comes into play in teaching as well. That's a particular challenge in teacher education programs, because they are usually the state wants teachers to be educated for their own school systems. And as we know, teaching is always a political matter. It's always used by states to actually, socialize the next generations. So there needs to be a responsibility between doing what's actually necessary for developing, what's necessary for building up a stable state as well, but also to have a freedom and critical reflection, not as in Germany that we would end up in a totalitarian system. So that's the responsibility of the teacher to make a balance between the freedom and also building up a basis for future generations. Though there we have a connection to a real social responsibility of teachers. And that's why I say academic freedom should also apply to teachers outside the higher education sphere, because teachers at schools also need to think about what they should bring into life with their students and how to actually they want to influence their students to be later on critical and reflective, to exercise democratic rights in a responsible manner.
Thank you. So you have done research comparing the University of Bologna and the National University of Singapore. What did you find? How do academics from these different universities understand academic freedom?
Comparing these two universities was quite a challenge because, as I said, In Italy, and also with the University of Bologna, academic freedom is a constitutional right. So actually the academics there should have a good basis for exercising their academic freedom. In Singapore, it's not part of any legislation. So yes, the academics there don't really have the right, but to start with, most professors at the University of Singapore were educated outside of Singapore, in the US, for example, or the UK. So it was really almost an impossible task to find someone at the University of Singapore who wasn't part of any other educational system. So they were actually influenced by the idea of academic freedom working in other contexts. And to be honest, as a high achieving university, academics in leadership positions there defined that they had a high degree of freedom because they were in a good position for it. They had the resources, as I said beforehand, they actually, most of them do have the financial resources to further the research and also to work on innovative ideas. They thought they have a really good network around them. But of course, when we talk about the social science, there might be issues where they have to think harder of what they could say, how they would frame it, and what consequences it might have on their career. In the University of Bologna, the fear wasn't that much about what they could say or couldn't say. They were talking a lot more about the economic demands and that they were underfunded and had also problems with too many administrative tasks within the university. So you could clearly see also in the natural science that they were much more pressured by outside things like quality assurance systems where they have to produce a certain number of papers or have a certain number of graduates. But actually then after all, especially if you look at basic research, meant a problem for their academic freedom and also for the younger upcoming professions and academics who actually were pressured to follow more research lines that would serve them to have great outputs from the beginning on. So they couldn't think that much about, yeah, bringing up a new theory because it would actually take more time for them to publish. And with this, they would actually fail with the quality assurance system. So you have these political aspects where you have to think about, can I really publish everything I want to say? Can I freely disseminate my research results? Or might there be a problem? There we talk also about self-censorship. Even if I think, okay, I might frame it differently, is this then a truthful research if I have to think about how to frame things if they were the outcome of my research? And we have to think also about, yeah, the structure in which we work, the economic aspect, if we have the resources to exercise the academic freedom. So it's on the one side, the environment, what's very important, also the structure where we can think about networking, about getting ideas from different people, collaboration. That's also an important aspect for both academics in both universities to be able to collaborate with other universities, with other national systems, to open their mind and to have more resources. And on the other hand, it's really about also the freedom to publish, to think, to disseminate, to also follow research approaches that might be controversial. So can you actually investigate a topic that's controversial or can't you? Or would you just not do it because you're afraid it might have a negative impact on your biography? So self-censorship, I think, is here a very important thing that we also see in the media sometimes, where actually, yeah, the media does not publish certain ideas because they are afraid that they wouldn't get an interview with a politician afterwards again. And yeah, that's also an important aspect thinking about academic freedom.
It's really fascinating. So many different forces and relations and dynamics that we witness through this concept. I imagine that it also has an impact not only at the national level, but also institutional, now that you mentioned self-censorship and so on. So we are both researchers of higher education and we also research universities, and sometimes people who are researchers of higher education also say that it might happen that they are afraid to be critical about their own institution or their own institution. So that's exactly a case of what you've just explained. So what do you think, how can we understand the difference between academic freedom and university autonomy in this way? Because it seems to me that people might think university autonomy is automatically kind of positively associated with academic freedom. So is it, or, you know, just what is this relationship about?
If you think about university, you actually think about the institution. So for sure, it's a positive thing if the institution can actually set them up and have a self-governance system independently from the government and from economical forces. So that would be a first step. But still, in this institution, we might have disciplinary ideas and streams that actually academics have to follow in order to get a position. So university autonomy is a good precondition for exercising academic freedom, but it's not a guarantee for academic freedom, because academic freedom is more about the individual scholars. So if we have tenure-track programs or really demanding ideas on how an academic career has to work, and if you can't do something differently because you wouldn't find a professor supporting you, you actually don't have academic freedom. And we also have to think that there are lots of academics who are not involved anymore in higher education. They might be part of a think tank. They might be part of a research institute. So it's not only about the universities where actually academics work with academic freedom. And I think with the rise of think tanks, we have a big other institutional context where academics should exercise academic freedom, because they're trying to change things, they're trying to inform policy, they're trying to inform economy. So they actually do need some degree of academic freedom there. So having university autonomy is a good first step. But if the university system is highly hierarchical and limiting academic freedom of the individual, we might even have problems in the system where we have a high degree of university autonomy and academics wouldn't have academic freedom, because they might only get resources for the research if they actually follow the strategy of the university. And there should be also a place for people to do something, thinking outside the box, doing something interdisciplinary and not following the poor strategy. So yes, it's a good thing to have university autonomy, but it's not a guarantee for academic freedom of the individual.
Yes, thank you. So we could think about the role of the university in society through how university autonomy and academic freedom are arranged in a particular time space. So what could you say about the changing role of the contemporary university based on your research of academic freedom?
You as a higher education researcher know that there is this trend towards neoliberalism in higher education as well. So what universities are asked to is preparing more and more, educating more and more students also for the job market. If we have 50 or 60 or 70% of the population having a university degree, we actually need to think about what to do with these people later on. It's not the idea that they go into education for a very long time and they all become academics. A society couldn't actually afford that many academics, so we are preparing them for the economic job market. So that's something that is changing. Beforehand, we had lower participation rates with people who could actually fill in research positions. At the moment, we educate, most students for the private job market. So we have to think about this, and then we have to negotiate between society, economy, and the university what actually is the idea behind educating the students. What skills do they need? It's not only about developing them further or giving them the possibility to develop their own personality within universities. They also need to prepare to get work afterwards. So actually, it's not anymore only the university deciding on the content of study programs. We need to have a communicative act between economy, universities, and also the political mission. And there comes the academic freedom again into play, because we need to think about how to negotiate this role and still having the possibility to look at the other parts of society more from the outside to reflect on the long-term implications. Economy usually knows, okay, as in Germany, now we need a lot of primary school teachers because we don't have enough. So the politics have the idea if we increase student numbers more and more, we will have later on enough students and we will have teachers and everything will be fine. But at some point we do have enough teachers. So we as teacher educators have to think about what to do with those that might not get a position, because at some point there is this, yeah, there are too many. So we need to think what we can, how can we educate them to actually have a wide spectrum of possibilities later on. We can't only say, okay, now you become teaching and that's forever your solution, because we don't know what's happening in the future. So we need to educate them in a more flexible way that they could actually decide later on their own biography what to do. And there we need this freedom to judge whether there must be other content that economy at the moment doesn't need, but we assume they might need it later on. And therefore we need academic freedom.
Thank you, that's a really good point. In many countries around the world, this obsession towards measuring quality of universities and higher education through strict employability numbers, you know, in a very kind of particular, very vocational way, is indeed on the rise. So that's a very good point that you've just addressed. I wonder if you could reflect on contemporary larger issues such as somewhat a rise of hostility towards the professional, you know, where we saw politicians saying, oh, I have enough of experts, or rise of the far right in across many countries and new leadership styles of many country leaders. How could you comment these larger shifts in society through the lens of academic freedom?
First of all, we need to state here that academic freedom can't be achieved as a whole, because freedom is a fluid concept. So you can't have full freedom and you usually don't have no freedom at all. We had times when people couldn't really move between countries before, and they actually started to send letters to each other to still continue the dispute about academic issues. And of course, there were many countries where they are going more into the far right area and where academic freedom is limited. Still, academics also need to actually position themselves and use the right to freedom. So it might happen also in other countries if we as academics don't use our freedom, if we just, yeah, continue the path of self-censorship, talking the things people want to know, then we are actually in danger of keeping our academic freedom. So I think it might be a responsibility of the whole academic community to support also these academics and systems where they can't exercise the academic freedom, to still have a platform to let people know what's going on there, to be able to move to other systems. And I see it as a danger, of course. So we need to think about how to address this. Of course, we can't intervene into political decisions in other countries, but there might be a support structure where we can actually support these academics to exercise their freedom in other spaces, at least, or to provide them a safe area where they can move to. And yeah, but it's a very difficult topic, and I don't think that there is an easy solution on how to prevent this.
Yes, and I guess we can also learn from history what breaches of academic freedom actually can lead to, or what this story is part of. So it seems that the COVID pandemic that we are currently living through gave an impetus to science and research. So it seems that there might be an opportunity for the university as a social institution to somehow recover its role in the society or reposition its role in the society. So I wonder, what is your take on the dynamic between universities, academics, and their autonomy and the society really in the past couple of years? And what do you think might happen, or what are the possibilities? What will happen in the very near future?
I think that something has changed about how society sees science, academics, and research in the discourse of Corona. Just because now we actually learn in the media about how social publishing works and that there might be results from a study that are not secure yet, but they need to go through some proof. So actually that gives an insight to the normal people who actually are not in touch with research on how these approaches go. But I think there is a lot of misunderstanding. And also here we need to be really careful, because most states actually have one researcher, they give the responsibility and the voice, like in Germany as well. So it's one person or one institution that actually has now the power to decide which studies will be published and which won't be published. So it might go into one direction. And now with this media awareness of them, they actually do get in a position where they have to negotiate between presenting the research in a way that people do understand them, but also to, I sometimes have the feeling that they also try to support the political decisions, because we are in a difficult situation where we have to apply some pandemic regulations, but there is also the idea between research doesn't only have one result at the, usually they're disputing results, and it's good so, because research and academic freedom is about having a dialogue, developing things further. So there can't be an easy solution to things. And that's what society now expects. They expect research to frame easy solutions, to tell them how they should deal with closing schools, not closing schools. I think it's much more complicated. It might be very difficult from case to case. And yeah, I think there, we might have a degree of self-censorship in some places, not telling that they do something bad or that they self-censorship them, but having only a couple of them in the media and having them so prominent might actually not show the full range of research we have done. Like air pollution, the Corona discussion is not a matter anymore in Germany. So they think about fireworks, and they're are actually enough studies showing that air pollution might be connected to high infection and of coronavirus. So there is not a balance between showing them all, and that might be really difficult. What I think, talking about academic freedom and referring back to Hayes, who says it's actually freedom of speech, we need to think really closely now as academics, also what we support. There are now very restrictive regulations and legislations coming up. So it's a real balance between keeping our freedom as humans and as academics and having a responsible attitude towards the Corona pandemic. So we need to find a balance between keeping us safe and developing measures that are useful and that work, that are also oriented towards research, but not losing too much freedom. So I think at the moment we are really talking not only about academic freedom, but about freedom itself. We are really in a challenging position, because some of the legislations might prevail even after the pandemic. And it was used in the past a lot to actually, have more hegemonic systems having really going into the totalitarian direction. And I think as social researchers, we have a responsibility to really exercise our academic freedom to safeguard that we won't lose freedom in society, freedom in our democracy, just to make sure that no one dies. And yeah, I think it's a really good point to rethink again about freedom in itself for everyone and academic freedom and the responsibility that's connected to it. How can we negotiate between keeping measures that are important and keeping the freedom in a high degree and returning after the pandemic outbreak towards the state of freedom we had before? So that's where I fear a bit about the future.
Thank you, Sina. This is absolutely fascinating input, and also showing how still very relevant the concept of academic freedom is today, although it's quite an old concept. So I really thank you so much for participating. I really enjoyed it, and thank you for your excellent contribution.